Have you ever stopped to consider the technology required to make an animated movie? Well, that's Steve May's job.
My first job was working on Monsters Incorporated. And the challenge there was the main character was Sullivan, who's a furry, hairy monster. And computer animated fur had not been done.
Steve is the chief technology officer at Pixar. He told us that every film he's made has required his studio to invent new tools.
Sullivan has about 2 million individual hairs. You can't draw or animate each individual hair by hand. You have to find ways to manipulate them in a different way. So we had to write software that would allow us to shape the fur, like groom the fur. Like, how do you specify the directionality and where the hairs are and where are they short and where are they long?
It's a staggering amount of work. But when you see the film, you see the results. Steve and his colleagues create immersive worlds, fantastical, but so real, you feel like you could touch them.
We didn't have software to really model the way that fur reacts to illumination and light. You know, I went to the Berkeley Library here to go study the morphology of hair follicles and how are they constructed.
Every element of this world needed that level of detail. That's what makes these worlds so real. Everything in them looks real.
You know, the humans have clothing, they have hair, they have eyes, they move, they might drive in vehicles. They're in scenes that have, you know, lighting. It might be outdoor lighting, it might be indoor lighting with practical lights.
And Steve says that for years, they had to build every scene piece by piece and then figure out how to fit all those pieces together.
We would build new technology, we would test it, we'd do animation tests, and it took a few years to really get everything to the point where we could animate shots in that film. And it's not like that as much now.
When Steve was starting out, Pixar's artists had to create every element of these worlds separately, painstakingly. It led to lots of innovation, but it was also exhausting.
We started out really with nothing, and we had to write code for everything. So now where there's very sophisticated tools that are available to our artists that we create internally, but also there are tools that are available to people outside of Pixar to use to do computer animation as well.
New advances, including some made at Pixar, make it dramatically easier to bring digital experiences to life, not only for filmmakers, but for businesses as well.
It could open up really new opportunities for audiences to experience our characters and our worlds and our movies in completely different ways.
And this is just the beginning. I'm Elise Hu.
And I'm Josh Klein.
And this is Built for Change, a podcast from Accenture.
Elise, I don't know about you, but Pixar films were, for me at least as a kid, kind of the like pinnacle of cool kids' films.
Yes.
That like motivated me.
Yes.
And then now that I've got kids of my own, they're definitely the go-to for stuff that we can both enjoy together.
It's totally true in my family, too. And I have to say, they make it look so effortless. It's actually kind of mind-boggling to think about all the technological challenges that had to be solved in order just to make a two-hour film.
Yeah, the big thing about it that strikes me is that these aren't just images, but they're entire 3D worlds. And everything inside it has to work in harmony. So you don't have, like, characters walking through walls or coffee cups appearing in the middle of your head or weird stuff that happens with bad code.
Exactly. You don't want that happening. And when you have the ability to bring all those elements together, all of a sudden it gets way easier to build these virtual environments, right? We're at a point now where this actually has a lot of real-world applications and business applications.
That's right. In fact, we talked to Accenture's Adam Burden about the evolution of spatial computing and about how it's being applied to all sorts of industries. So let's go to Adam.
I had this idea where we could actually turn software into these buildings and represent it in a virtual space.
Adam's not a filmmaker or a graphic designer. He's Accenture's global innovation lead and chief software engineer.
When I was younger, I always wanted to be an architect, but I lacked the drawing ability to pursue that career path. So I ended up a software programmer instead.
But he never lost his architectural sensibility, and he brings it to his programming work.
You build a foundation. It's actually called architecture. When you build programs, you know, they can refer to as procedures or subroutines. And those are the building blocks, basically, of constructing buildings or spires or other things on top of it.
This isn't just an idea or a static image. It's a 3D world ready to be explored.
We took some software programs and we put them into virtual reality. And, you know, using was the equivalent of a haptic suit and some virtual reality glasses, I can actually take other people, including myself, and walk them through my code.
Now, what Adam's describing isn't commonplace, at least not yet. It's a pet project. But it does exemplify a shift towards integrating digital worlds into our own. And that is already very real.
Spatial computing is it's one of these umbrella terms, and it describes basically all of the technology ingredients that enable people to immersively interact with digital and physical spaces.
Spatial computing describes technologies in the same space as augmented reality and virtual reality. And Adam says that that's leading to some hesitation around it. As you may have noticed, AR and VR have developed in fits and starts.
I actually recall seeing this on some early smartphones maybe 15 years ago or so, where you could hold up a smartphone to a city street and it would like overlay restaurant names and like ratings of restaurants and things like that on top of it.
That's the core utility of spatial computing: computers connecting and interacting with physical spaces and humans at the center of it all, engaging in both.
It really evolved into some headset gear and other technologies that created these more virtual reality type of spaces rather than just augmented reality. And that the technologies, though, that it suffered from some of the same challenges that we see a lot of things in the early phases of adoption. Things like competing standards, and if we're honest, too, a lot of the headsets and others have been kind of clumsy.
They've also been expensive, leading to an impression that the audience for this kind of tech is limited to rich gamers. But spatial computing technology is improving rapidly.
We're seeing a lot of evolution in this space, and you're seeing some convergence around common standards so that different devices can actually interpret this.
Another big issue was simply that these devices require a ton of bandwidth, but that's much less of a problem now.
5G just been a huge leap forward in terms of the volume of data that can be there and eliminates a lot of the latency problems that existed previously. So we've seen, you know, technology kind of catch up, if you will, to where augmented reality, virtual reality, and spatial computing wanted to be. And I think it's opening the door now to new possibilities and creating new value for businesses and great experiences, better experiences for consumers than maybe what they've seen in the past.
Which means that enterprises can finally start to take advantage of spatial computing's potential. Adam says spatial computing will strengthen bonds between businesses and clients by bringing them together in the same virtual room.
Imagine, though, for a second, like I'm taking you into something I've built, an application, and it's actually walking into a building.
But there are important ways to employ spatial computing behind the scenes, too.
I want you to imagine something like a retail store operator who's preparing for a big Black Friday sale. You know, they've got to be really careful about how they lay out the perimeter of their floor. They want to make sure they have good traffic flow and they're not creating dangerous fire situations. You know, they're going to have a lot of people in the store all at once. Imagine being able to simulate that in an AR/VR type environment before you're welcoming people into the store to make sure that it's going to provide the right experience that's expected.
Spatial computing can help enterprises and employees prepare for all sorts of situations.
Another great one is in training and being able to teach people in a very different way so they learn things in a more immersive environment. In fact, even Accenture does this with some of our new hires. You know, we have something called the Accenture Nth Floor, which is a virtual environment where we bring a lot of our new hires into to give them their first introduction to Accenture.
One common use case is building interpersonal skills. From managers to retail workers, it takes practice to learn how best to respond to certain situations. But spatial computing can train workers in any environment, including the most dangerous.
Imagine a oil field worker. It's a really dangerous occupation, and they're just learning how to actually work with some of the equipment and some of the tools at the oil field site.
What if you could learn on the job without any of the risks involved in the job?
I'd feel a lot better if they're practicing first in a virtual, in a safe environment before they actually go out and try that on an actual wellhead. And a lot of our clients feel very much the same way.
Adam says it's important for business leaders to lay the groundwork for adopting this technology. Where can it add value now? And how can you prepare your enterprise to best take advantage of spatial computing going forward?
So I would look at definitely at value and making sure you have the right architecture and standards in your organization to be able to implement this in a consistent way and not be, you know, debating about, you know, which technology or which protocol you should actually be using.
All right, Josh, what have you done in your life that you wish that you had been able to practice virtually before actually doing it?
Yeah, you know, that the ability to practice something in a virtual environment before you do it for real would have been so helpful for so many different things I've done in my life. You know, at one point I hosted a TV series and we ended up rappelling down into Vesuvius.
What?
And I don't know about you, but going into a volcano, I remember thinking, I wish I'd done a little more research on this.
Wow. Well, even if you're not rappelling down into a volcano, I think it's clear that this kind of tech will have a lot of practical applications. And it seems like one of the biggest hurdles to wider adoption has been a lack of standards and problems with interoperability.
Exactly. So let's go back to Pixar's Steve May, who's also a co-founder of the Alliance for OpenUSD, which is attempting to solve that exact problem.
So the process of making a 3D animated film is really hard. It involves a lot of artists, and the software is inherently difficult to use. I've not flown a space shuttle, but I would equate to what, you know, I would think of like a trying to interface with the dashboard on something like a spaceship. It's really complex.
No offense to any astronaut listeners we might have, but Steve has a point. His team not only designs every element of fantastical three-dimensional worlds, they also have to make all those elements interact in ways that look natural and seamless on screen.
After Monsters, Inc., I worked on Finding Nemo. And Finding Nemo, it was, how do you make something look like it's actually underwater? And there's a lot of components to making something look like you're underwater or you're near a coral reef.
Every one of these elements is complex enough on its own. But how do you get them all working together as part of the same world? Well, that's where Universal Scene Description, or USD, becomes crucial.
Universal Scene Description, we just call it USD for short, which, by the way, does sometimes get confused with the US dollar. USD represents this kind of common language for describing 3D data that all of the tools that we use speak. And so it makes it easier for the artists to work more creatively, and it allows us to integrate new technology faster.
It wasn't always this simple. As we heard in the opening, Pixar artists could spend years getting one element of a scene right. But then it was on to the next element, and then the next, until eventually they had to figure out how everything fit together.
One way to describe it is, I think a lot of us are familiar with image files or music files, you know, MP3s or JPEGs for images.
You probably don't think about file formats all that often, and that's the point. You only really have to think about them when you're faced with the annoying task of trying to reformat something or using one format in a medium that calls for a different one.
You know, if I said, hey, I've got a model of Woody from Toy Story and I want to share that with you, but you would say, that's great. How do I process that? Like, how do you send that to me? Like, what is that data? What's that media format? So USD is the answer to that.
Having a standard gets everyone on the same page.
USD encapsulates all that information. It's not just like one file. It's not like one JPEG. It's actually like thousands or millions of them that are pulled together, aggregated by USD. It combines them all together, and it allows all of our artists and animators to edit and modify and animate the scene at the same time.
Working collaboratively instead of dealing with each individual element on a scene all on its own, that's a complete game changer.
We use a whole lot of different tools. And all those tools historically used different formats to describe the data that they did. So there was no common language that these tools all spoke. So what you'd had to do is you had to do a lot of translations and conversions of the data into other formats.
USD is a way of bringing together every element within an artificial 3D world. And it's already transformed the way that Pixar works, breaking down barriers and making it easy for artists and engineers to build new worlds together. Steve says he co-founded the Alliance for OpenUSD because he wants everyone to be able to experience the same thing, which is why Pixar published the source code for USD in 2016.
We have an industry, thankfully, that is competitive, but it, you know, has recognized over the years there's a lot of value in sharing technology. And, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. The simplest, the best, I would say the best path for gaining adoption of a new technology, especially one where you want many people to use it and incorporate it into a wide variety of tools, is to make it open source.
And since they did, Pixar has seen many other companies adopt USD and join the Alliance for OpenUSD.
It's pretty exciting. It can be a little bit scary, but it's pretty exciting. The potential, I think, is dramatic. I think it really could have a fundamental impact on what we do as creators of content, on what we do as consumers, and the kinds of new businesses that it can create. Obviously, we make animated films, which are 2D recorded films. They're a little bit different than interactive, immersive computer graphics like you might have in a VR headset, an AR headset, or spatial computing device. But, you know, we do use those kinds of devices to do some of our work.
And it's not just Pixar's work or the entertainment industry where these opportunities are emerging. It turns out that the world is full of complex systems with tons of moving parts.
There are models for train systems, European train systems. There's models for large-scale atmospheric and weather simulations, you know, kind of global-scale weather simulations, cellular phone applications. So you can kind of simulate cities and where you need to place your cellular signals so that you get the optimal coverage in a city.
And even when it comes to Pixar and its parent company, Disney, he says that the potential for spatial computing in USD extends far beyond the screen.
You know, Disney already is I would say, the leader in immersive experiences because they have this thing called theme parks. and the theme parks are like immersive versions of our movies. It could open up really new opportunities for audiences to experience our characters and our worlds and our movies in completely different ways. You could bring those characters and worlds home to you. You could add additional content when you're actually at a park. USD can really fuel the entire Disney company and connect our storytelling across the theme parks and the consumer products and the movies that we make, all of those things together. We're kind of bridging the physical and the virtual worlds.
It's so exciting to see a major company like Pixar open sourcing some of their solutions so that the industry as a whole can really advance. And not just the entertainment industry, but other industries besides.
Yes, absolutely. But then there's also this question of what it's like to use. A lot of people, I think, are hesitant to put on a headset and enter a virtual world in the first place, or they're not sure they can handle the physical element of it along with the virtual element.
Yeah, it's true. My nephew, the first time that he encountered VR, he got so excited that he immediately spun around and ran 10 feet straight into a wall.
Wait, what? Was he okay?
No, he's fine. He's fine. He's a hardy kid. But my point is that there may be reasons to have concerns about the technology, but those things are getting solutions. I think that the main thing about these sorts of technologies is the human element. It's the connections that matter. And to that end, we're going to talk to somebody who can really speak to how this technology can really forge meaningful connections.
The entire tech ecosystem has really grown into a space where creating VR experiences is so much more accessible, which means we get to be really creative in the way that we think about really building a community around helping to open the doors for older adults.
That's Kyle Rand. He's the co-founder and CEO of Rendezvous.
Rendezvous is a company that has built an immersive technology platform for a longer, healthier, and more connected life. And what that really means is that we use virtual reality to allow older adults to experience an aging process that is really quite magical.
Kyle's always found intergenerational relationships deeply meaningful, but his work with Rendezvous also stems from his background in neuroscience.
We were looking at how structural changes in the brain that naturally happen as you age actually correlate with deficits in economic-based decision-making models. There's actually things that happen as you age in the brain that lead to these kind of deficits. And at the same time, on the other side, there are ways to exercise the brain and there are ways to live your day-to-day life that keep the brain engaged, that then keep you engaged and allow you to age in a much more healthy and more fulfilling and more purposeful way.
So Kyle and Rendezvous are using spatial computing technology to address cognitive issues in the aging population. And these are issues that have direct effects on people's health.
Last year, the US Surgeon General shared that social isolation was the next big epidemic for us to focus on in the United States. That's where Rendezvous started. When we started looking through the data, we found that it's a really scary picture that we weren't really talking about enough as a society. Collectively, prolonged social isolation leads to a 30% increase in mortality rates. And one of the best things that we can do as we re-envision the aging process is we can make sure that every older adult is set up to be truly embedded in a community and have authentic social relationships.
Rendezvous creates virtual reality experiences. But the point of these experiences isn't to escape into another world. It's to explore our world and to connect with the people around us. Rendezvous headsets can be found in assisted living communities in the US, Canada, Ireland, and Oceania, where residents enter the experiences together and explore them together.
As we were getting started and as we started doing customer demos, there were a fair number of people who blatantly laughed at us. It was like, you're not going to be able to use this technology for this population. And we've seen very clearly that that's not true.
A group of people will enter a room and put on the headsets, and the experience always begins in the same place, a porch.
So they're really just sitting on a back porch overlooking a big lawn, and there's butterflies flying around them. For a lot of people, that's their actual first experience in VR, and we get so much joy just from that. The staff member says, all right, we ready for a hike in Machu Picchu? And everybody says, yes. So that staff member is not only taking them on a hike through Machu Picchu, they're also taking them and they're teaching them about maybe the history of the Incan Empire. They're talking about modern day South America, whatever it is. They're not just going through experience. They're really opening the door and they're opening their minds, which is really, really important.
The key to all this is connection between the people undergoing the experience. The digital world is really just a means of strengthening those real world connections.
We are not in the business of providing entertainment. We are in the business of providing magical moments that help people connect. VR, by nature, allows people to open up doors that have otherwise been shut. And when you put on one of these headsets, all of your physical limitations go away. All of your cognitive limitations can melt away. And the realities of your current living environment don't matter anymore. And you get to do literally whatever you want.
Anyone who's at risk of social isolation can benefit from that kind of connection. But even Kyle was surprised by the effect that Rendezvous's technology had on one particular user during an early trial.
About halfway in, the community wheeled in a woman, and her caregiver came up to me right after she was all situated and said, I need you to understand, this woman, her name was Mickey, is somebody who has been a part of our community really since the beginning. And not only has she been a part, she's been a critical part. She is someone who knows everybody by name, is always the first person to say hi to you in the morning, walks around with this big old smile on her face, is just like a light in our community.
But Mickey had recently been diagnosed with early stage dementia.
And her first big symptom was expressive aphasia, which directly impacts the region of your brain focused on communication. And so she really lost the ability to communicate.
Everyone around Mickey was saddened by what was happening, so Kyle and his team decided to try something. They had a hunch that a particular experience might be just the right thing for this moment.
We put her into a room full of golden retriever puppies. And the speed at which a smile just spread across her face and she lit up. She started interacting, she started reaching out, she started literally kissing towards them and telling them to come here and come closer. And it was like day and night. All of a sudden, she was just vibrant. Not only did she smile again for the first time, but she actually was calling out to them. She actually started talking to them. And by the end of her full Rendezvous session, she took her headset off and she kept talking. She actually followed me and my co-founder out of the building, telling us we really needed to use it for children because it would be so amazing for kids to be educated while being able to experience these things. And what I love about that is that she went from 3 months of being mostly non-communicative to literally pitching us business ideas after just a 30-minute Rendezvous session. And that's the magic that's possible when you really connect someone back to the ability to smile, the ability to experience joy, and the ability to open up. And that's what Rendezvous really does.
Okay, Elise, that I gotta be honest. When I interviewed Kyle and he told that story, I absolutely cried. Like, that totally made me cry. That is such a fantastic story that we have this technology and that we can really help people that couldn't be reached any other way.
It's so cool to see that this technology isn't just usable, but can also be so meaningful and important to people of all ages.
So to learn more about what we discussed in today's episode, check out the Tech Vision Report at Accenture.com. It talks about other trends like AI and wearable technology.
Thank you to Accenture's Adam Burden.
And to Steve May and Kyle Rand for talking to us.
Built for Change is a podcast from Accenture.
More episodes are coming soon. Follow, subscribe, and if you like what you hear, leave us a review.